From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready, a guest-heavy podcast for you today. Hope everybody enjoyed the podcast with Andy Kennedy yesterday. Gotten a lot of good feedback for that. He's great, as always. So if you hadn't listened to that, that was yesterday. The Wednesday podcast with Andy Kennedy. Today, Jeffrey Wright's going to make his weekly appearance on the show. We're going to talk a lot of Penny. We're going to talk a lot about Memphis, some Ole Miss, some stuff. I don't remember what all we talked about. It's been a little while ago, but Jeff, we're going to join us here in a bit, and then also we're going to talk with Ole Miss men's golf coach Chris Malloy. They are in the middle of their spring season. They go to Charleston, South Carolina tomorrow to participate in the tournament hosted by Hootie and the Blowfish.
You ever been there, Charleston?
I've never been to Charleston, South Carolina. I hear it's fantastic.
I want to go to Charleston. It's on the list.
You know, I feel like we had the
I'm
same
intrigued.
Conversation with Chris this time last year. I think we had him on right before or after this tournament.
We did.
We've discussed Charleston, South Carolina.
We had him on before.
Okay. So basically the exact same thing.
Exact time. Same thing. Yeah.
So
that's a trip I want to make. I just want to see Charleston. I've never seen it. I've heard a lot of good things about it. And it sounds like my kind of place because everybody's drinking there. So yeah, I've got to make that happen somehow.
Yeah, so they leave tomorrow for that. They've got a tournament, a couple tournaments left. We talk about his team. We talk about Braden Thornberry. Cecil Wedner from Jackson has been named SEC Freshman of the Week a couple times already. We discuss him. And also the Web.com Tour event coming to town next month at the Country Club of Oxford. So those are our guests today, Jeffrey and Chris. We'll just kind of interchange in between them as we do today's podcast. You won't hear from us as much, which might be a good thing. But baseball opens at A&M tonight. That is a 6 o'clock start tonight, 6 o'clock tomorrow, and then 2 o'clock on Saturday. I don't know. I keep getting asked about Greg Kessinger. He's traveled. We'll see. I don't know if he's playing or not. My guess, if you made me guess, is he plays at some point during the week. However, I do not know when that will be, so we'll all find out together. As they are in College Station, Ole Miss number 5, A&M number 12, A&M coming off a series loss to Auburn. So that's what's going on with baseball. And then we've got plenty of recruiting on the site. We've got some other podcasts. The Beer Garden went up yesterday. It's a baseball beer garden with Ben Ingram of the Atlanta Braves Radio Network and then Brett Taylor of Bleacher Nation talking about Cubs. So Braves, Cubs, and more on the Beer Garden yesterday. Neil and Jay have another Greatest Pod in the South presented by Cathead Vodka up on the site. And then a soft verbal will fall later today as well. So that's our podcast lineup with MPW Digital. And this podcast is brought to you by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. And we told you yesterday, I'm going to tell you a couple more times, April 7th, Chad Kelly will be at the Oxford Exxon. His first signing is a Denver Bronco. That's at, I believe, 9:30 or 10 o'clock, something like that. And for everybody that walks through, Ben Craddock and his family is going to donate $5 to the Magnolia Speech School. Great cause there. So come on out before the spring game and see them at the Oxford Exxon. Again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
Well, Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. You call that number, you ask for Corey Clark, you tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for, and then he sends you quotes. And I've done it. I'm in the process of talking to Corey right now, and he sends you, not only does he send you a quote, he sends lots of photos. He's extremely good at what he does. Sends you all the information you need, and then it's right to the bottom line. And so it's up to you at that point. Like Jay and I sort of discussed on the Greatest Pod in the South, we were talking about Jay's car buying adventure that sent him all the way to Taylorsville, Indiana. It's really up to you. You get your quote, and you can shop it. Or you get your quote, and you can go ahead and trust us when we tell you that Corey and the people at Clark Ford are ready to add you to the list of podcast listeners who have allowed Clark Ford to take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. It's right to the bottom line, no haggling. It's just a great car buying experience. You get a great product, great service after the sale, all of those things from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. At the end of the deal, tell Corey, hey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention whichever of our podcasts make you the happiest. If you want to, mention them all. That would be nice. But mention one, and That's $500 off your bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory.
Let's jump right into it now. Jeffrey Wright on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Good morning, Jeffrey, on this Thursday. We get to get a bit of basketball, Penny Hardaway, different things.
A penny for your thoughts,
a
Jeffrey.
A penny for your thoughts. coming up here.
So or a penny for your season tickets or a penny for your beers at Bardock. They say you can't get anything for a penny anymore. All you got to do is hire Hardaway, and everything's a penny.
I did tell Neil, I think it was last week, I give 24/7 credit. The Memphis site did a month or whatever for 1 cent. They never mentioned Penny by name, but you got whatever for 1 cent. I thought it was clever.
Yeah, Jonah Jordan is a buddy, and he did that, and I just tipped my cap to him and said, as someone who has been involved with running a subscription site and someone who has a business degree, that was well done.
Yeah. So we're going to get to plenty of basketball. I am curious, though. A couple days ago, basically the cover story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Mike Myers, potential closer, could be in AAA. You know him probably better than I do, and I know him okay. Does he have the mentality to be a late innings guy in the major leagues?
Yeah, I do. I actually think he and I kind of came up with this theory once. We were discussing that we thought the guys that end up making the best pitchers were guys that actually played football. And it helps if you play quarterback because you kind of got to have the short memory thing. And, you know, Mike was a really good quarterback in high school. I do. I think he's got the ability. I mean, think about this alone. You know, his first start obviously went completely against the script that you would hope to have had in your first.
Couldn't have gone worse.
Couldn't have gone worse, and still he got back, man. You know what I mean? Like, I think that says a lot. Like, the fact that he was still able to get back up to the big club after that, there's a lot of guys that would have ended. And I definitely think that it's a similar type makeup to be a closer. You know, he's just kind of the guy that, he's the guy that if something bad, I mean, you can even go back to college, Chase. How many tough luck starts did that guy have? And he, you know, I'm sure it chapped him, but it never really affected him. You know what I mean? Like, his last start in college was another great start. Like, to me, like, those are the same type attitudes that you have to be a closer.
Does it just also mean, I mean, no offense to Mike, but he hadn't been up and done it. Does it mean the Cardinals bullpen is in complete disarray?
I think you can probably – that could be one way to dissect that problem. Yes, what? I think that would be fair.
Aren't you shocked that as of this day, March the 22nd, St. Louis has not signed Greg Holland? I mean, it makes so much sense. It he's right there. It's a fit. It makes sense. I'm stunned, really.
I can't figure out why. Like, normally when the Cardinals don't do something – there is like a reasonable expectation or a reasonable explanation, but it's usually a financial thing. It's usually, hey, we don't think he's worth this amount of money. I don't get what the deal is with Holland. What am I missing?
I don't know. I mean,
there has to be something in the medical, right?
I mean, I guess he was pretty effective last year. It makes sense for them. It makes sense for the Angels. The only thing I can think of is that either there's something in the medical or, more likely, he's just not budging. And he sees what happened with Alex Cobb, who did not budge and ultimately got what he wanted. And maybe he says, you know, I'm just going to ride this because someone's going to get hurt. And in May, someone will need a closer. And here I am.
Any idea who his representation is?
I'm not positive on this, but I think Holland is a Boris guy, but I don't know that. I could be way off.
I mean, that's the only other explanation that I can think of.
But you know, some of the Boris guys settled. Moustakas clearly settled. Arrieta took a deal that I think a year earlier he would have laughed at you. If you'd said you're going to sign a 3-year deal for $75 million, he would have said, "No, I'm not," and he did. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just maybe there's a strategy here, and maybe it is something as simple as the medicals are fried.
So based on
the deal that Arrieta signed, he left what, $50 million on the table?
Yeah, I mean, if you if you
what
believe
put in front of him?
If you believe the reports, he left $45 million on the table.
That's good business.
Little news in Memphis's conference. Jeffrey, little reaction here. Connecticut has hired Dan Hurley as its new head coach.
So he was in between the Connecticut job and a dump truck full of cash from Pitt.
Yep.
I think if you put a gun to my head, I think I would rather have the Connecticut job.
Really?
But that dump truck full of cash would have been tough to say no to.
See,
only for a couple of reasons. I think we can now, like, Jamie Dixon did a really good job at Pitt. Jamie Dixon also doing a really good job at TCU. I know Ben Howland won at Pitt to an extent, but overall now it's an ACC job in it's in arguably the toughest conference, if not the most difficult conference to win. You don't really have a great recruiting base. I just think that overall it's not that great of a job. Whereas the UConn job, now you look at the American, no sweat, got three teams in the tournament. You look at like what Greg Marshall did at Wichita State, where he lost more games than ever. And I think his seed was higher than it's been the last 3 or 4 years. But I know he's been a one seed before out of Wichita State, but his reward for that one seed was playing Kentucky. So how much of a reward was that? The options there, I think the American's an easier league to win in. UConn basketball is clearly matters. It's not a difficult job. Now there could be the element of unrealistic expectations, but I mean, pretty much everywhere you go that's a good job has unrealistic expectations. I mean, you look at Kentucky now. I've heard serious Kentucky fans discussing whether or not Billy Donovan would leave to take the Kentucky job. And this was,
is Cal sick?
This is obviously when, well, no, this was when Cal was in the middle of the 5-game losing streak. I mean, think about that. But as the story goes, John Wooden, after they lost in the national semifinal, one of his big boosters came and patted him on the back and said, "It's okay, coach. We're still planning on bringing you back next year."
Yeah, I've heard that too. You know, it kind of ties into Memphis with Penny, and then there too, the American. What stuck out to me about that conference, because I followed SMU a little bit just because of Dylan.
Sure.
As they were getting banged up and injured, they stayed in the bracketology and stayed a pretty much a safe at-large until the wheel completely ran off. I mean, there is a level of kind of respect for that conference when it comes to certain teams, and I think Memphis would. I think UConn does fit into that bill. SMU fits into that bill where they get every opportunity to impress people to get in from that league.
When you look at their champion was a 2 seed, and their second place team, you know, which Wichita State winds up getting, I think it was a 4. So you get a 2, a 4, and then Houston had a 6. And Houston had a 6 only because, unlike Wichita State and unlike Cincinnati, their out of conference schedule wasn't that big. It really is interesting to note in basketball how metrically driven all that seeding stuff is, because for years and years you kept hearing the reason why the SEC wasn't getting teams in was the scheduling. And then, you know, you had to consider at some point, okay, well, maybe this is just an anti-SEC bias after all the football wins and everyone's tired of them. No, it just turned out that once all the teams got their schedules up, there they were. I mean, you know, to your point about SMU always being on the line, you know, think about when Mississippi State was in the middle of winning a bunch of games in conference play and they were sitting pretty. You never even saw their name on the bracket lines because they were basically the only team in the SEC that didn't schedule. Almost everyone else that would have had the same record as State at that point would have been on the line.
Yeah.
And it's not some type of anti-Mississippi State bias. It was simply the numbers didn't add up.
Yeah. So what has it been like in the Bluff City the last 24 hours or so as Penny Day came and went?
Penny day.
Sorry.
Month.
Year.
Penny decade.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I think the reaction has been even bigger than I think even the most gung-ho Penny defender or Penny guy could have even imagined. It is an interesting reality, because I've always thought this, and I guess we're about to find out, I've always thought for Memphis to financially max out, they are very dependent on the casual fan, the casual fan buying tickets and the casual fan supporting the program. And what I mean by a casual fan, the person that didn't really go to the school, the person that doesn't have any real loyalty to the University of Memphis, but likes Tiger basketball. And before the Grizzlies, that wasn't all that difficult to accomplish, because Tiger basketball was usually the biggest institution in the city. And now with the advent of the Grizzlies, those people have kind of gravitated more towards the NBA because, well, the product's better in general. But almost every person that is a Memphian has a huge soft spot for Penny Hardaway. Like, for instance, I mean, he's my favorite player growing up. He was the first jersey I ever owned. I've never particularly cared about Tiger basketball, but I am intrigued as hell by Penny Hardaway. And I've got buddies that went to Tennessee that have all said the same. I've got buddies that went to Auburn.
Penny was
the needle, man. It's like, it's on the smaller scale. It's like Tiger Woods, man.
Yeah.
Think of, golf's back because Tiger's back. It's not hard.
Penny Hardaway, people forget this. Because I guess because young people didn't experience it. And I'm not criticizing young people, but their parents remember. Penny Hardaway was, for multiple years, the biggest deal in the NBA not named Michael Jordan.
He's still the number two selling shoe line for Nike in the history of the company.
I mean, they had Little Penny. Remember the ad campaign with Penny and Little Penny and stuff? And I mean, that was not too many people get their own damn ad campaign.
So, for instance, like Dylan's the perfect example. Dylan's, I think, 5 years younger than I am. Dylan never saw Penny, and he was asking me, he's like, you know, was he really that good? Were you really a – we use wrestling lingo. Were you really a Penny Mark? And I was like, oh, yeah, because to me the greatest litmus test for a favorite player is just put basketball on in front of a 7- or 8-year-old. And they'll pick their favorite player in about the first 10 minutes. And Penny, like, no one told me, hey, like, it's not like my parents sat me down and like, you're going to like this guy. This is going to be your favorite player. Like, I just, that was what I watched. Like, you know, Memphis became a magic town because of Penny.
Yeah.
And the truth is, and this is what I think is the most interesting aspect of it, if Penny Hardaway, or let's say even this, if ACL surgeries in the early 90s would have been better, and Penny Hardaway maybe bounces back and doesn't have the injury-plagued career that he does. Still played 15 years in the league. But let's say that he had the longer career at the highest level that he was playing. Is this happening? Because I do think part of his motivation right now is he still has a chip on his shoulder because he feels like he didn't accomplish what he set out to accomplish in the NBA because he got hurt.
And there's two great... There's two great what-ifs in the NBA, in my opinion. One is obviously Shaq and Penny. What would have happened if they could have kept them together? ESPN did a really good 30 for 30 on it. I mean, people always do this deal with Jordan. And look, Jordan's the greatest ever. I'm not belittling Jordan. But Jordan never lost. Yes, he did. Shaq and Penny beat him that 1 year. I mean, they knocked him out. They went to the finals.
He never lost in the finals, but he got his ass kicked a lot before the finals.
Yeah, got his ass kicked in the Eastern Conference Finals numerous times, because if you play enough, you're going to get beat. And yet, you know, Shaq's agent wanted him in Hollywood. Shaq wanted to be in Hollywood. Then Penny got hurt. And then, of course, the other one is, you know, what happens if the Thunder trade Serge Ibaka instead of James Harden and they leave the three stars together? Do they win multiple MVPs or titles, whatever? I mean, sports is full of what ifs. Penny Hardaway is part of a really big what if, and people just don't remember how good he was. He came into the NBA and within 2 years was a transcendent player.
Let me ask this real quick, to really either one of you, because Memphis is this perfect fit for Penny because of being from there and all the history and everything else. We always talk about,
and he came back. Like that's the other big deal. Like, it's not just he's Penny Hardaway from Memphis. And this is what used to drive me insane when everyone had their question marks about Penny. The dude came back and coached middle school basketball for 3 years. Then he coached high school basketball. Like, I don't – that's the attitude of a grinder. Like, yeah. That's the story that you hear about the guy that becomes – you know, his whole life, all he wanted to do was coach, coach, coach. He started – couldn't get a high school team, so he got a middle school team. Then he got a high school team. Then he found his way into a college job. Like, that's the story we write about. What more do people want?
I guess my question is, we always talk about how, and maybe you just answered it. Everybody always talks about, oh, you know, tradition doesn't matter. Kids to have 3-year retention spans at the most. What makes him so engaging as a candidate if it was somewhere other than Memphis? Because obviously in Memphis, he's got Team Penny, he's got all these things. But given the fact that, yeah, maybe he's a grinder and all these things, but what would have made him attractive at Ole Miss, Georgia, name your school elsewhere other than the Tigers?
He is that guy that is, I don't know if obsessive is the word, but I think it is. Like, he is extreme. He is competitive to the nth degree, and he obsesses over a task. Like, you know, when he decided to pick up golf, like, he became obsessed until he became a really, really good player. You know, he's a low single-digit handicap. But that wasn't because, like, oh, Penny just wants to be the golf course. It was a challenge. It was something in his mind. And it's hilarious. Everyone was talking early about, especially here in Memphis, like, well, you know, Penny doesn't have the greatest personality. The reason why Little Penny existed is because they needed a mouthpiece for Penny to make him more attractive. And that's so they came up with Little Penny, because Penny couldn't talk as well. Well, in the last 24 hours, you've not been able to see a public appearance without Penny Hardaway. You know, he's out there shaking hands. He's, you know, the truth is he's putting asses in seats, and he's talking all on the radio stations. He's doing all the things that you would just consider that is part of the gig. Because at the end of the day, there have to be people in that building. And he understands that. And even Kermit Davis understands that. It's written into Kermit's contract, as Neil pointed out. Like, those are the things that, to me, just show he gets the point of the job. Like, he's doing the little details that Penny Hardaway could easily just rest on his laurels and go, hey, you see that number 25 hanging in the rafters? That's my jersey. Y'all come on out. But it's like, that's not the attitude. Like, he's doing all the little small things that you have to do in this job, and he's crushing it right now.
What's that roster going to look like next year?
Talented.
That is the most fascinating question, because he gets Alex Lomax he got Alex Lomax out of the Wichita State letter of intent. And also on that, like, I've never been the biggest Greg Marshall fan, but I do give a hat tip to Greg Marshall, because you can look at it, I'm sure, cynically and say, well, that just means he's leaving, or, well, what else is he going to do? He didn't have to release him from the letter of intent. And he could have, even if you decide, well, he's not going to play at Wichita State, he could have made it difficult for Alex Lomax to play at Memphis, an in-conference rival. And he didn't. And so I tip my cap on that, because I thought that was a well-done move. The question for me is, does Wiseman reclassify? Because I think Wiseman is holding out hope that the NBA rule changes for the one and done, and that he can just go straight pro. I don't think it's likely to occur this year. I would almost think that's a certainty that it's not going to happen this year.
Very unlikely.
But since he has 1 year of eligibility left, I don't know how unreasonable it is to think that maybe by the next draft that's been addressed. And so that might also factor in. If the rule stays as it is, I think Wiseman plays at least for Penny for a year. DJ Jeffries, I think, is going to wind up at Memphis. Chandler Lawson will wind up at Memphis. I think now this will probably mean that Tyler Harris is going to wind up. Tyler Harris will probably wind up at Baylor. But the two other interesting ones, the kid that's named Anthony at IMG that plays with Hardaway's, that plays with Hardaway's son,
Anthony Simons,
5-star shooting guard. Yep, I think that is very much in play. And then the truth is, I think Shaq's kid is very much in play. Now, the other flip side of it is Memphis is going to have to keep some of the kids that they have on the roster for APR reasons.
Right.
And there are – if you made me guess, there will probably be 5 new guys, but I don't feel great about that. That is – I will say, that's the question that gets asked the most that – gets a concrete answer the least, if that makes sense.
Take a break in our talk with Jeffrey to tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. 662-607-7773 is the phone number where you get a couple different pressure washing options right now for podcast listeners. One is you get a $50 off pressure washing of over 2,000 square feet, or if you sign an annual contract where they take care of you all year long, they'll do the driveway and sidewalks for free. That's with MasterCut, 662-607-7773.
The Moonlight Grahams will be playing Saturday, April the 28th at World Music Nashville in the Bellevue area at 7 p.m. The Moonlight Grahams are a folk Americana band started by Ole Miss grad John McCann. Tickets are $10. That includes a digital copy of the new album. The digital download cards will be given to you when you arrive. You can buy tickets off their Facebook page or on TicketZone.com. Make sure to get your tickets before they sell out. You'll absolutely love it. Remember, their new album, The Moonlight Grahams, is out on Spotify and iTunes. So make sure you follow them on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, and if you like them, spread the word. The show, Saturday, April the 28th at World Music Nashville, 7 p.m. You don't want to miss the Moonlight Grahams. The podcast is also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering 1-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield, 3-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With that 3-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's 3-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Now back to Jeffrey Wright on the Oxford Exxon podcast. Yeah, Shaq's kid coming to Memphis to play for Penny Hardaway is just, it's just theater, man. It's, all right, here's
well, this is what I was going to ask you, Neil. Why, you know, when you mentioned the whole GOAT thing and you mentioned the, you know, of course, Jordan's the best. And then occasionally you'll get like the diehard Kobe defenders and then they'll go all in. Why do we never consider Shaq? Because I have eyeballs and I've also looked at a record book and Shaq was unreal.
Oh,
and
God,
why
dominant.
Did he, like, young Shaq that was, you know, there was a finals, there was an entire playoff run where Shaq averaged, like, 40 and 20. Why do we never include Shaq in that argument? Because I don't understand that. Like, to me,
because basketball
be
purist.
Very much included.
Yeah, but I'll tell you why. It's because basketball purist is obsessed with guys who could also shoot. And they do this deal with Shaq that all he did was dunk. He wasn't as skilled, as athletic as Olajuwon, for example. And it's like, well, yeah, but nobody was as skilled and athletic as Olajuwon. Olajuwon was a 7-footer who could have stayed in Africa and been a professional soccer player.
Sure.
I mean, literally could have played at the World Cup level as a 7-footer. So, of course, no one's going to be that skilled. But Shaq was dominant. Shaq was, he and I are the same age, roughly, almost exactly the same age. It's hard for me to explain to people. Like Carson will ask about Shaq, and I can't explain to him how big of a star Shaquille O'Neal was. Shaquille O'Neal was a big enough star that for the first majority of their time together in Los Angeles, he outshined Kobe Bryant.
Yes, he was number one.
He outshined. Have you seen the sit down and there's no intermediary. It's just Shaq and Kobe, and they're just sitting there talking, reflecting on their careers. It is fantastic. They both get almost kind of emotional. They both have to fight back tears, and it is great theater if you haven't seen it. It was fantastic. I couldn't turn it off, and I was flipping.
Yeah, no, I saw it, and I kept wondering the whole time. I was like, do they regret the way that this turned out?
Yes.
Because it almost felt like that there was true remorse that they both just didn't figure out ways to basically win 10 championships, just stay together and win everything.
Well, you remember, I don't know if you saw it, you know, they, after they had split up and Shaq had gone to Miami and won a title, which motivated Kobe to work 23 and a half hours a day. And Kobe outwardly said, when he won his fifth, they said, what's on your mind? Is it chasing Jordan? And he goes, no, I got one more than Shaq. And they sat down and they won that co-MVP of the All-Star game. And after the after their little press conference thing, the trophy's sitting there. Of course, there was just one trophy. And Kobe told Shaq, you take it, give it to Sharif. And at that moment, Shaq said, and he told Kobe this, he said, I thought to myself, you know, I treated this guy like a, you know what, and it was the first time that he kind of thought, this is all on me. You know, this guy's a better guy than I thought he was. He's a better guy than I gave him credit for. It was great theater, but the Shaq and Penny thing too, because if they'd stayed together, and Penny could have stayed healthy, there's no telling how it would have changed. Here's my question, because there's a lot of speculation about this, and now that it's all done, it doesn't really matter anymore, except I'm curious. Memphis went from sort of sitting in neutral on this Penny Hardaway thing to going 1,000 miles an hour, and they skipped every gear in the process. Was it because Ole Miss got involved, or what happened?
I don't think it's a simple, you know, as you've taught me, I don't think it's ever as simple as, well, either this happened or that happened. I do think Ole Miss getting involved expedited it, but I thought the real reason, and we heard it yesterday, season tickets for the University of Memphis were down to 4,115. Let that sink in for a minute.
Wow.
You know, essentially, the amount of revenue that they were down from tickets and from just the promotional stuff that they count on was over $4.5 million. So I think inevitably what sped it up was they just started looking at the building, and the as games went on, it kept getting emptier. Even in the midst of a 6-game winning streak, the building was still empty. And so I think once they got to that point financially, then the president said, hey, this isn't a wins and losses thing. This is a business situation, and this is our cash cow. And even though football's been successful and football has really pushed the envelope recently, It's still the financial lifeblood of the university. And so I think that's initially what happened. And then I think maybe Ole Miss getting involved pushed them to make it happen quicker. But I think this was going to happen this year no matter what.
By the way, Anfernee Simmons, the IMG guard, he is entering the NBA draft. His agents, Drew Rosenhaus and Bobby Petrella, tell ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski.
So he's old enough to do that?
Apparently so.
So I guess IMG was just his prep school year.
Yeah, Simons is number 19.
What is IMG? Is it a high school or not? What the hell is it?
Yeah, they go to, or at least they did. They would have to take, they took a bus, I think it's called Pendleton School or something like that, down the road. But it's crazy. It's
wait, what is it though? Is it a high school or is it a fifth year school?
No, it's a high school. Casey Mulholland went there. Andre Agassi went there.
Okay.
I just put those two together. Good job, Chase. But I mean,
Jay
no, there's,
Patterson?
But I mean, there's, yeah, I mean, well, there's.
Wittenberg went there. Like, yeah, I mean, there's the.
Well,
the list goes on.
It's
like,
the different schools.
It's a better question.
It's Ledbetter for golf. It's Bollettieri for tennis. And then
who are the kids that pay full tuition to go there? That's what I want to know. Because that's the conversation. Those are the parents that I want to sit down with and say, what are you doing here?
That's the kid that when you were 10, when their kids were 10, they thought they were going to the major leagues, and now they decide to pay $48,000 a year to go hang out with these other kids.
Right, and then get told that their kid's great, but as long as the check's clear.
Yeah, because it's like weight training 5 days a week, plus all the practice that goes on. They go to class from like 8 to 2 or something, and then there's a sports psychologist they have to meet with once or twice a week. I mean, Casey took me through it one day. It was insane. So,
yeah, and
whatever.
How'd that work out for
He ended up having
I'd
a
like
decent.
To know what's their
go ahead.
What's their success rate?
Oh, I mean, they're not living off the success rate. They're living off the hyperbolic top end that works out. And their basketball had been kind of fledgling behind everything. Do what?
Did he ever play at Ole Miss?
Well, I mean, he pitched a couple games here or there. And then he left and went to, like, some JUCO in Florida. Then ended up at either, like, North Florida or Jacksonville or somewhere after that. He and Mike or somebody got into it because he kept trying to do his pitching regimen from IMG and wouldn't follow the team's protocol.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, he had whatever his pitching coach at IMG told him to do was interfering with whatever Ole Miss was telling him to do.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
You're telling me Mike didn't handle that particularly diplomatically?
I don't think he played again. So
yeah. Well, in fairness, though, I don't think Casey played that one particularly well. That's an unstoppable force, meaning an immovable object. Like, Casey Mulholland's a weird dude. I think Chase would agree with that. But also, Mike's a stubborn dude.
Well, and you have no track record. Like, you came from IMG, you were banged up, you were hurt, and then you just automatically start making demands. I mean, it's one thing if, you know, Drew decided as a junior, hey, well, I really feel like I need to do this. You probably had a little more wiggle room in the process there.
Right, like Lance Lynn, year three, Pomerantz, year three, that's different if they say they want to change their regiment than a kid that's yet to record an out in an SEC game.
I know that Penny has been, I would guess, 99.99% of your content. I'm curious, has the Kermit Davis hire at Ole Miss, has it even registered on the Richter scale there in the Bluff City?
Ole Miss had a hire?
Yeah, yeah. It's down to one vacancy now.
Here's the good news, Rebel fan. I can tell you one market of over a million people that has not criticized Kermit Davis for his comments about the flag.
Memphis didn't even know what happened.
Still doesn't. I mean, that is. I can tell you. I have. You know, for a station that gets flack for having left-leaning hosts, I can tell you with 100% certainty, Kermit Davis has received no criticism from 92.9 FM ESPN.
Jeff Calkins, Jeff might lean left, but Jeff likes green, and so he knows right now what's buttering the bread, right? I mean, that this is easy. This is I used to call this free radio as a former radio person. There was days that I said this is today's a free show. You are enjoying just free shows right now.
Oh, that doesn't go far enough because we've also had some, you know, we've had some really good months here recently, and we've seen our name next to number one. And it's kind of one of those things that even though you say, yeah, you know the. Ratings are nice. We don't really care about the ratings. That's what you say when you're kind of at 2 and 3.
Yeah.
When you're at number one, you really care about the ratings. And more importantly, you start obsessing about keeping that number one.
Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this way because I used to do this in Mobile, and you have to be careful here because the super sensitive, politically correct people lose their minds on some of these words. So if you're that type of person, just skip forward 10 minutes. Are you beating There's two demographics that in a place like Memphis, or in a lot of places, that you that it, sports talk radio, if it's beating it, A, you're killing it, and then also you've got a free topic on your hands. Are you beating the top urban FM station, and are you beating the top country FM station?
Yes, we are beating both.
Wow, because those so that you know out there in Radio Land, those are the most dedicated audiences. The people that listen to country music, they don't listen to anything but country music. I mean, and I know that's hyperbolic, but it holds true to the numbers. And the people that listen to the urban station, they typically don't leave the urban station; they stay on it. And they're on it the entire time that they're listening in drive time or in their office or whatever, at home, whatever they're doing. Those people don't leave their stations unless there's something really big going on that is transcendent in a community.
Well, and I'll do you one more. The other one that we're beating right now, we are beating also the classic rock station.
That one doesn't surprise me as much as the others.
Yeah, I mean, but it is still like a dedicated, you know, if you want to hear your Skinner in the morning.
Yeah, that's where you go.
You're listening to, you know, and not everyone's pining to hear sports talk opinions in the morning. Right now they are. And right now the topic has been the exact same topic. And the numbers aren't slowing down. If anything, they're going up.
All right, give me, and I got to go in a second. Give me your final four teams out of each region. We'll start out the Staples Center in L.A., where Michigan, Texas A&M, Gonzaga, and Florida State are hanging out this weekend.
Okay, am I right in thinking that Mark Few versus Leonard Hamilton feels incredibly unfair? On top of that, but also on the other equally as puzzling, Leonard Hamilton is 70?
I know.
I didn't know that.
He just beat
Holy
Chris Mack.
Hell. He, yeah, I know. That was the other thing. And, of course, guess who had Chris Mack? Just really shout out to the entire city of Cincinnati right now. Like, on Sunday, had a horrific tragedy happen to Cincinnati. I'm not saying I would have celebrated it, but it would have taken me a little longer to write that T's and P's tweet on Sunday because of what they did to my bank account.
So who you got in this? Who you got?
So Gonzaga beat Michigan or A&M, I guess, is our question.
That's the other thing. Like, Beeline versus Billy Kennedy feels like an unbelievable mismatch, but at the same time, it's like, how does Michigan score against A&M? Like, I don't – I'm so weirded out. Like, I'm going to take Gonzaga, and I'm going to take Michigan. So that means everyone else right now should go load up on A&M and go load up on
Florida State
as well.
I love A&M in this quadrant, and I don't know why. I know that it makes no sense to gamble on Billy Kennedy in this group.
Well, and a roster that's down two players.
I know, but the two players they have down low are studs. And now they have point guard play.
With him.
And they have point guard play right now. Yeah, I know.
The other thing that I love, three of my favorite moments from last weekend, one of them came from Gonzaga. And I don't know if you noticed this, but Gonzaga plays with its food. Like, they jump up on Ohio State and murder them. Then they let Ohio State come all the way back just so they can have that little feeling of, yes, we're going to do this. Only to slit their throats and then watch them bleed out. But then the better part was, as they're bleeding out, they give them a little bit more hope, you know, like maybe they give them some fresh cold water as they're bleeding out and kind of, you know, caress their hair and let them know it's going to be all okay, only to let them know after they've drank the water, by the way, that was poisoned, and then they kill them again.
Anybody knocking out Kentucky in that quadrant?
That was my other favorite moment of the tournament. When Cal put on the mob hit on Buffalo in the last 5 minutes, and then he told his kids not only to slit their throats, but he told them to slit their throats again just in case. That was unbelievable. That last 5 minutes. Just if anyone is out there and teased Buffalo, I legitimately want to hug you because you were inside the number the entire game. It really wasn't. It really wasn't even all that sweaty until Cal put on the mob hit because that coach disgraced him.
So they're going to San Antonio.
I've got them in the Final Four.
Okay, Villanova.
Actually, no one cares about anyone's bracket, but mine actually is okay.
That's not bad. Pretty good these days. The best overall quadrant for basketball: Villanova, Purdue, Texas Tech, and West Virginia.
Yeah, I've had Villanova all year, even though I know there's been times where they can't play defense. I just think they're the best basketball team. Like, and then the other thing is Duke is probably the team that I trust the most, like, other than Villanova, and they got to play each other. So give me the team that's more experienced. I know Duke probably has, and it's not a hot take, but the overall talent probably favors to Duke. But Villanova's way more experienced, and it's not like Villanova's out there with just a ragtag bunch. I mean, Villanova's got pros, too.
So we're going to get Duke, Kansas, and then Duke's going to win?
Because I think it'll be Duke and – thing is, like, I don't know. This other thing is weird is, are they going to actually get this elbow thing for hot – is Haas really going to play with a fractured elbow?
Neil?
If they can get the NCAA to sign off on the cast, yes. That was the reason he didn't play the other day, was they wouldn't approve it.
Is that wise?
I don't know. I guess it depends on whether the kid thinks he's got some kind of an NBA future or whether he thinks this is it and this is his one shining moment. So be a Purdue legend and – beat Purdue's Willis Reed.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. All right. Have a good day,
Jeff. One shining moment.
Thanks to Jeffrey for coming on, as he does every single Thursday morning here on the Oxford Exxon podcast and the Billy's Pecans hotline. We'll get to Chris in a couple minutes. I just saw Tony Romo making his PGA Tour debut today.
His what?
PGA Tour debut.
I must be living under a rock. The Tony former Romo. Cowboy quarterback is playing on the PGA Tour?
That is correct, today.
Like as a legitimate member or sort of as like, hey?
Well, no, he's not run through Q School or anything. Just his special exemption
for the
week.
Good for him.
He's tried to qualify for the U.S. Open multiple times and never done, and he's a good golfer. Now he's no way near – I mean, I don't think he'll be as competitive as Steph was on the Web Tour.
I was getting ready to ask.
That's the comparison if you want to make one.
He's not as good as Steph, I would assume.
Well, no, he's probably better than Steph, but the Web Tour and the PGA Tour are two different events. Yes. I mean, they're probably very similar. I take that back. Okay. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, for whatever.
Tony Romo, just life is – life is throwing him so many curveballs that I just don't know. You know, it's good for him for catching a break.
He and Andy Roddick can meet up and go, hey, finally something worked out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Poor Andy hadn't won all those Wimbledons. But yeah. He cries himself to sleep every single night.
I don't know how he does it. Goes home to Candace.
Oh, gosh. Do what?
I just don't know how he makes it. Who? I don't know how he gets through the day.
Who, Tony?
Yeah. Oh. Has his millions from his Cowboys time.
His health.
Has his health. Goes home to.
Yeah, look, if you're the tournament wherever they are, though, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Let him play. Let somebody come out and watch him. Because all the people go, hey, he's stealing a spot. And I understand that. I do. Frankly, it bothers me a little more when the Web Tour does it. But they get a couple special exemptions to give whoever they want to. On the PGA Tour, if you want to play, then qualify. I mean, those sponsor invites are always all over the map. It's usually some local dude. You know what I mean? I mean, whatever. Yeah. It is what it is. So
I'm just glad something's finally working out.
I mean, he's not going to win. So is it really working out?
Yeah, the point's proven. Yeah, exactly. He won't win, and he'll go home so devastated.
I'm actually seeing, let's see, SEC Network tonight and tomorrow for the A&M games. The Saturday game just on Network Plus, as always, but SEC Network for tonight and tomorrow night. 6 o'clock starts both times. I have no idea who's on the call. I know David DeLucci's in Lexington tonight. He gets Sean Jelly, Casey Mize tonight with Kentucky and Auburn. So might have to get a dispatch from David next week about that matchup. But
let's do that because I want to get his thoughts on Mize because we'll do the you have the first pick. What do you do?
Okay. So we'll We'll do that first.
Phil Steele, real quick before you do this, you'll be curious to hear this. Phil Steele has come out with the toughest schedules in the country. Would you like, for football season 2018, would you like to know where the SEC stands?
I don't want to guess, but yeah, go ahead and tell me.
Auburn's number 4 in the country with their schedule. A&M is 5. This is strength of schedule. Missouri is 12. LSU is 13, which is not good news for LSU. Arkansas is 16, which is not good news for that team at all. Dan Mullen and the Florida Gators are 29. Mississippi State is 40. Kentucky's 43. Alabama's 54. Ole Miss comes in one after the Tide at 55. 55th hardest schedule in the country. Vanderbilt is 59. Georgia is 63, which is probably a sign that the Bulldogs are in the mix. South Carolina, 72, ditto for Will Muschamp and company. And Jeremy Pruitt and Tennessee have the 73rd hardest schedule in the country. This, according to Phil Steele. So if you want to get mad at somebody, get mad at Phil Steele and his encyclopedic memory.
Well, Southern Illinois, Louisiana Monroe, and Kent State are going to suck, and then Texas Tech's not very good. So that's the reasoning for that. Ole Miss also obviously plays Vanderbilt in the East.
Who the hell does Tennessee play?
Must be.
I mean, it must be like just like Bozo the Clown and his three best friends.
Don't they play Memphis?
I have no idea.
Doesn't Tennessee play Memphis?
I don't know. Tennessee football 2018 schedule. This won't take but a second. West Virginia, East Tennessee State, UTEP, Florida, Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, South Carolina, Charlotte, Kentucky, Missouri, Vanderbilt.
That still seems a little harder than that, though. I mean,
West Virginia is decent, usually.
Yeah.
Right?
Got to play Alabama from the West.
But East Tennessee's bad. Charlotte's bad, and UTEP is usually bad.
Yeah.
I mean, not just bad, but, like, atrocious.
Yeah. Yeah, it's UT San Antonio that Frank Wilson had built up a little bit.
Did you see where they have a guy in Eric Edholm's latest mock draft?
I did not.
They have – UT San Antonio has a guy going 11th in the draft, the defensive lineman.
Okay. We'll now go talk to Chris Malloy on the Billy's Pecans hotline, and this will close the show. There's no reason in us coming back and telling you goodbye. So, Chris, we'll close it. We'll have another podcast tomorrow as well. I don't know who we're talking to. We'll talk to somebody, or we'll talk to ourselves for a Friday podcast. You'll probably enjoy more than most of them when we do something stupid. So before we get to Chris, I'll tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is the place to go to read all about sildenafil. You know, it's that little white pill you can tear into quarters, halves, or take the entire pill if the moment is needed. 662-252-2321. TysonDrugs.com is the website. Now they also operate G&M Pharmacy in Oxford. It's on South Lamar, and they deliver local.
Guests, join our show on the Billy's Pecans hotline. Let Billy's Pecans handle the details and let you handle the thank yous. Billy's Pecans knows the perfect crunch for every palate, whether it's a gift for a corporate client, presents for the staff, tokens of goodwill for a referral. From 5 to 5,000 orders, they'll handle it all with expertise and excellence with their signature Southern style and with items at every price point. You simply can't choose wrong. It's billyspecans.com or 1-800-624-7404, billyspecans.com. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than 4 decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than he does. Go to his sites, harryalexander.com. Send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, that's the place to go. It's right off Interstate 55. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissans. Great lease deals as well. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. The podcast also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have 3 attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience, more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell & Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. The number in Hernando, 662-342-7700. In Oxford, 662-281-8800. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. And the podcast is brought to you by Romero Miller State Farm. Everyone knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance, but there's a lot more to it than that. They have a bank for auto financing. They have commercial insurance rates, business insurance policies, rental properties. If you have insurance needs in Mississippi or Tennessee, or if you just want to compare rates, which you should, give Romero Miller State Farm a call, 662-893-1212.
Little update here as we were not making fun, but discussing a second ago. Tony Romo, even par through nine holes in the Dominican Republic this morning. Tied for 38th with about half the field yet to tee off. But he has beaten 12, 15 pros as of right now that are on the course. So tied for 38 currently for Mr. Romo today.
Just so happy for him.
Yeah, I know. All right, more golf coming up now. And again, after Chris, we'll say goodbye now. But anyway, Chris Malloy now on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Chris, thanks for joining us this morning. I guess you're a day or two away from headed to Charleston. Did I read the schedule right?
We are. We're going to leave out early tomorrow morning and get over there and Saturday practice round, then Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So we're right back at it.
You get like Hootie and the Blowfish doing the stuff over there, isn't that right?
We do. It's pretty cool. They have a private concert, you know,
really?
For all the
okay.
tournament participants on Friday night. They do it at a pretty small venue, and so it's really cool. It's really cool for old guys like us to think about that. Except when I try to explain it to our guys when we get over there. Once again, they don't know who Hootie and the Blowfish are. Like my guys, the only reason they really know who Hootie is because they handed them a second place trophy and Braden, a trophy last year. So, it's cool for us. You know, those guys, they'd probably rather watch the second round of the year, Sweet 16 in the basketball tournament.
So you go to Charleston, you still go to North Carolina, you got Waverly, but you're kind of getting close to kind of the money time of the season. How do you feel like the spring is going to this point?
I think it's good. We've played some good golf, we've played some bad golf, and I'm not giving you the standard coach's answer. It's I think we're close to playing good. We just haven't put it all together yet. San Diego was a great example. We go out and shoot 500 in the first round. We're in second place, playing great in a great field. And then we kind of come out and lay an egg in the second round. And it's the same day, right? It was a 36-hole day. And we looked like a totally different team. Now, part of that's just golf. And we've all, any of us that have played it, know that it's hole to hole and nine holes to nine holes. And then especially when you play two different 18-hole rounds, anything can show up. And then we came out, got off to a little bit of a slow start in the third round, and then played probably our best 12-hole stretch of the entire year, to finish strong. So it's been a little bit of that, this spring. But people also forget, they look back to last season when, we're breaking records and, we're playing really good golf. Well, at this time of the year, we really weren't. We were about in the same position, and it's right about this time of year where we really started to catch stride, find an identity, and really march towards the postseason, which, as we all know, that's the one you're concerned about, right? I mean, it's nice to peak at any time, but you really want to peak as you get into postseason.
Braden wins the thing last year, does the Walker Cup, and now leading his team again. How has he kind of handled everything over the last 9-10 months since it blew up?
A lot better than you and I would have.
Okay. Yeah.
It's amazing. I can't say enough about the young man. I mean, it's his poise, you know, everything that he's dealing with. That's the one thing that people just don't get. And I hear a lot of folks say, well, I mean, Blake didn't have as many wins as he did last year. Is he struggling?
Yeah.
I go, no. The dude's a first-team All-American. You know, we're going to be another first-team All-American this year, and he's playing really good golf. To win in our sport is very tough. It's not like a tennis or baseball or basketball. I mean, all other sports, you know, where it's, you know, you head-to-head versus, you know, another team. I mean, in our sport, it's very tough. You can have a great tournament and not win. It is very tough to win. So I think we're starting to see how great, and I even said this yet last year as he was going through that run of tournaments, I don't think we'll really appreciate how great of a year last year was for Braden until the next year, until, you know, a year like this that he's going through and is playing great. You know, in our sport, it's also about, it's not necessarily about your wins. I mean, that's great, but, you know, I judge a player, and I talk to my team about this all the time. I don't care how good your good is. I mean, everyone on my team, you know, most everybody playing SEC and, you know, high level college golf, but they're good's good. They all have 66 in their bags. They're all here for a reason. How you evaluate a truly good player and especially a great player is, well, how good you're bad. And, you know, it's not how many rounds of 66 you had this year, but what was your high round? And Braden has really done an incredible job, and probably a better job this year than he did last year, of limiting the bad rounds. And, you know, the guy just doesn't really finish outside of the top 10. And especially in some of the fields that we play in, guys, that's incredibly tough. But he's going through his, you know, first few tournaments, as I said, may not have a win yet. He's got a second place finish, but he is, you know, doesn't have any bad finishes. He's about to catch stride. You know, I would watch out for Braden Thornberry as we go into this week and as we go down the stretch.
I always get asked this, and I don't have an answer because, as you know, I'm not very good at the game of golf. I don't know the difference necessarily, but Braden told me last year when I talked to him right after he won the thing, he said, you know, I've got to get better mentally. I've got to keep doing some things to improve. And he's talking about for the PGA and the highest levels, obviously. He's just a junior. But Sam Burns has had a lot of early success out of LSU. What is the typical thing that the college golfer, that Braden, when he does try to make this professional jump, what separates what works and what doesn't at the next level?
Well, I think knowing who you are. I think knowing your golf game, being mature enough, and it's, you know, Chase, it's very similar to the jump you make from junior golf to college golf. I mean, you know, I watch a lot of these guys come in and, you know, that are very good golfers. And then they say, okay, well, yeah, this is college golf. Now I got to do something different. Well, that was golf. Mm-hmm. It's playing 18 holes of golf. And listen, as a coach, we will help refine you as a player. It will point out, you know, some things you need to work on and, you know, a little bit of attention to detail. But at the end of the day, you don't have to reinvent yourself. You know what works for you. And so it's the same at the next level when you jump. You know, people say, well, now it's professional golf. Well, now I'm, you know, playing for a check. And, you know, now I'm playing against Sam Burns. Now I'm playing against Tiger Woods. What, who cares? It's golf. And, you know, it's similar to what we talk to our guys about. You know, here, if you start to make any sport situational, but especially golf, if you start to make it situational, you're probably not going to be very successful. You know, if you're standing over a putt, and we've all done this, so think about standing over a putt, and you're going, oh, this 18th hole, I got to make this for birdie, you know, to win that press that I got against Joe over here. Well,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't like your chances, because you know what? You're thinking about all the things that don't matter. And all those are all things that aren't going to help you make that putt. You know, and if you just put yourself in the moment and go, hey, look, I'm sitting here on the 18th hole at the Country Club of Oxford, and I got a 6-foot, you know, left-right putt. You know, I'm aiming on the, you know, left edge. Boom, hit it. You have a lot better chance of making it with that mentality. So, you know, fast forward to guys that try to make it out on, you know, tour, and they start to play their professional career. you know, they get into Q school. And, you know, that's just the way you make it through, is the, you know, PGA Tour qualifying school. And now they go, well, now it really matters. Now I'm sitting here in Q school. Now I'm nervous. No, it's, hey, I'm at, you know, La Quinta Golf and Country Club in California. And, you know, it's a Sunday and I'm on the first hole. You know, I mean, that's the only situation you need to be concerned about, not all the outside noise. And I think you see that in other sports too. I mean, right, it's, you know, they start to put pressure on themselves and go from there. Braden is really good about that, though. That's one of the things I really pride him on, is he doesn't make it a bigger deal than, you know, than what it is.
Another in-state talent, Cecil's already won a couple SEC Freshman of the Year. How has he been so far in his first season?
He's been good, and we were excited. You know, got a couple of freshmen on our team that we're very excited about, you know, between he and Charlie Miller. And we saw what they accomplished in junior golf. And we know their ceiling is very high. Cecil has stepped in and played, you know, played very good at times. You know, once, you know, we laugh with Cecil, he wants to win so badly. It's, and yeah, you know, I laugh with him. I mean, he just beats himself up when it doesn't go, you know, according to script. And you see that quite a bit. But I tell him all the time, I said, there's no one I would rather coach, right? And you know, than somebody that wants to win that badly. I can't teach that. You know, now we got to help him pull in the reins a little bit and not beat himself up. And he took a, he's taken some steps throughout the year, and you've, I think what you've seen with Cecil is when he's worked his way into the lineup, he'll have a good round here and then, you know, maybe take a step backwards. And it really all comes down to attitude. But what he's done is, in my opinion, he's progressed nicely. I think in San Diego, he took a step forward in that direction. But he, if he continues to listen you know, and not beat himself up on the golf course, he's going to be a pretty special one, I can promise you that.
It was announced on Tuesday, Braden, you're going to get to play in the Web.com event here in a month or so, the North Mississippi Classic. Him playing, obviously, is a good thing, but the tournament in town, locally, a club that you guys play at a good bit, does that have a direct or indirect effect just as a positive for your team and your program?
I think it's an absolute positive. You know, in our sport, you know, we don't host a home tournament. You know, we would like to at some point in the future. So, but even if we did, you know, it's once a year. And you know, once again, the uniqueness of our sport, that you're not having multiple opportunities to play in front of your hometown crowd. So I think just for that alone, it will be great. It's going to be great for, you know, for Braden once again to, you know, to test himself against some of the best. You know, in the world, not just our country, and in golf. But to do that in front of a hometown crowd will be a really special opportunity. You know, and with that tournament, I don't know if you guys have touched on it, and I haven't heard it a ton, but I don't think Oxford, and I don't think folks know how good that field is. I think some people, you know, from the outside look at it and say, well, that's kind of like a, you know, NBA, the D League or whatever it is. And, you know, there's like a double A farm team coming in town for baseball. It's not, these guys are great. And I would be willing to go through that field with you guys and highlight some of those names. And then 5 or 10 years down the road, especially go back and see how many of them have won majors. Cause I'm going to probably guess that, you know, in that field that'll be here in the next 10 years, you'll probably have 5 or 6 major championships.
The other thing, too, is I was telling a lot of people, it's just going to be really fun golf, because on the Web Tour, that's not a par fest. I mean, they're firing it. They hit it a long way. I mean, it's going to be birdies and a lot of, you know, high-level golf from a scoring standpoint, too. I mean, 4-under is not about to go win this thing.
It's not, and those guys are so good in our sport, and I think in any sport really, but in our sport, there's such a fine line between, you know, the Web.com tour and the PGA tour. You know, Brant Snedeker will well, he kind of talks about it all the time. I mean, he came up to the web.com tour and he says, the level may not be as high. He goes, but it is competitive. He goes, and there's a level of golf in there that is a lot better than most people think. But yeah, they're great. You know, all those guys are, and really, it is the stars of tomorrow. That's where the PGA Tour, and the crop of talent that will be on the PGA Tour and winning and very successful for many years to come. Well, that's them right now. It's the Braden Thornberrys, the Sam Burns of the world. You saw Sam, play with Tiger Woods over the last few weeks, and he's been competitive. I think he's 10 finish outside, maybe the top 20, finish inside the top 10, a couple of times over the last month on the big tour in really good fields. And he's probably not the favorite to win this tournament.
Yeah.
So that should tell you something a little bit, about the depth.
Also some guys that are just kind of waiting on the Champions Tour or whatnot. Stuart Appleby in the field, Sean McKeel, former PGA winner in the field as well. Chris, probably won't talk to you on the podcast again before this. The Masters in a few weeks. It seems like everybody's starting to round into form that you would hope is at their form for this event. What are you thinking? Give me a couple guys that you like, and maybe somebody not named, Rory, Dustin, or Tiger that could come out of somewhere.
Yeah, I tell you the name, and listen, I get it. I'm going to be called a homer because he's my guy. But Daniel Berger is going to play well there, I think. And I get it. Zach Johnson won the Masters, so I'm going to sound like a complete idiot as I mention all these bombers. But Zach Johnson won it because he just wedged his eyes out, that week and played well. But the course just suits a bomber, and it's I was over there a few weeks back and just kind of looking around. And if you look at it through the eyes of a Dustin Johnson, a Rory, Brooks doesn't seem like he's going to play, but some of these bombers, it's still there for them, right? I mean, it's the widest areas, the widest parts of the fairway are just so far up there. It's kind of hard to rule out those guys. I mean, it's really hard to rule out, Dustin Johnson. Who do you guys have?
I mean, I'm hoping that
I'm picking Tiger.
Yeah, Neil's the casual Tiger guy over here. I don't know. I want to see Rory win it. I don't know.
I want the big cat in a red shirt stalking down the fairways on Sunday afternoon. That's what I want. Damn it! And I'm not looking for anything but a big cat in a red shirt.
I can promise you that. The majority of the golf world is on your side. I can tell you, whether you're a Tiger fan or not, we need it. We need to see that. It's good for golf, but he's played pretty well lately. I mean, it's kind of hard to rule him out. Bubba. I mean, that place obviously suits his eye, as well. So it's a pretty unique place, in a sense that, those guys that win, and the guys that have had success, and there's a lot of repeat success that's there. Shoot, the other name, Mickelson won his last time out. He's played some good golf. So how about seeing Tiger and Phil?
How about Tiger, Phil, Rory, and Jonathan Randolph all tied after 16 on Sunday? How good would that be?
Exactly.
Tigers.
Hey, that's what we're all rooting for.
I'd get the cat in the big red shirt. I'd get Phil. I'd get Rory, which would mean Jeffrey would be completely involved. Jonathan would be there, and so I'd be able to say, Carson, remember the guy that was at our house for the Christmas party? That's him with the big cat.
That's him
with the big cat in the red shirt. And it'd be awesome.
What I'd really like to see? I mean, and I'm looking forward to this because I think we'll see it at some point, is, the Dustins, Johnson's of the world, the Daniel Burgos, they really have had success since Tiger has been out. And you hear a lot of talk, and I've heard it from Dustin's mouth, that, hey, listen, I'm not intimidated by Tiger, You know, I had asked him one time about, hey, well, when Tiger gets healthy, you know, what do you think? He goes, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm stronger than he is. I hit it further than he does. I put it better than he does. Why am I going to be scared of Tiger? And that's those guys' mentality, at least what they tell you. It's a whole different thing when you're sitting there on the 16th hole at Augusta, coming down the stretch of competing in the Masters, and you see the big cat right there. So I'm yearning to get to that point of watching, you know, Dustin and Rory, you know, head to head in a major with Tiger when Tiger's starting to play some good golf.
Yeah, I think it'll
be interesting to see how that goes down.
Yeah, it was Rory a couple weeks ago that said he thinks that just Tiger's gallery and all the crap around him probably cost him a half a shot a round, two shots a tournament, just because of the stuff.
It's a circus.
Yeah. Crazy stuff.
I want the circus so bad.
Yeah, Neil's in. He's suddenly on Sunday afternoons. He's in now. It's at least getting a spot in the channel rotation for him with Tiger back.
And like you guys know, I'm telling you, I've said this for a while. For whatever reason, and I can't explain it, I am an incredible barometer for golf. I really am. When there's a storyline that pulls me in, every single time the ratings are like sky high, and when there's a tournament that for whatever reason I just whatever, I never looked at it, the ratings weren't very good. I for whatever reason happened to be a great golf barometer.
Neil, I'm in the same boat. I do not watch golf. I do not watch professional golf. I know that sounds dumb. You know, like a golf coach, you know, this is your profession. Well, that's probably why I don't watch a
sure,
lot of it.
Sure, exactly.
Unless one of my former players is in the mix. I mean, take that out. Unless I have a personal rooting interest, I do not watch it unless it's a major. You know, I'll watch it. But man, at the Valspar in Tampa, you know, Honda, and then especially at Bay Hill, I'm glued. I'm back. I'm back to watching golf.
I'm the same way.
I couldn't agree with you more.
I was watching the Sunday Valspar, and if you had come down and said, Neil, where is this tournament? I wouldn't have been able to tell you. And if you had said, can you name any of these other cats that you're watching along with Woods, I'd be like, well, there's that guy. And I mean, I really couldn't. And so there's Tiger Woods, and all of a sudden I'm flipping. I had two NBA games that I was interested in, and I'm a junkie and I admit it. And I'm watching less and less of the two NBA games that I'm interested in and more of the Valspar, which the last I checked was not a major and never mattered to me. And I couldn't tell you right now where they play the Valspar. And I was locked in because they had Tiger Woods on a Sunday in contention. And I'm not only fascinated by him, but I'm fascinated by the body language of the other people that are playing with him. And when the guy rolled the putt up, and I can't tell you what his name was, he rolled a putt up and it rolled right back down to his feet. I'm like, yeah, there you go. You're all freaked out by Tiger. And even though that probably wasn't the case, it was probably just a really hard green for a guy like me who doesn't play a lot of golf, obviously. It's completely fascinating from a psychological standpoint to see how Tiger Woods impacts other people positively or negatively. I'm fascinated by it.
I can't agree more. And, you know, guys, before I came back to be the coach at Ole Miss, I lived in Tampa where the Valspar was. I was coaching
there you go.
University of South Florida. I would play in the Wednesday Pro-Am. I wouldn't watch it on TV. I mean, and I certainly wouldn't go out to the tournament. And it was 15 miles away from my house. I wouldn't even go to the tournament. I wouldn't turn it on. I'd pay attention to see who won just so I knew, but I wouldn't look at it. And I was, as you said, I was glued to the TV, you know, watching it. So it's the power of Tiger is real.
Last thing, you mentioned personal connections. How is Brooks coming along, if you've talked to him recently?
Yeah, I haven't spoken to him in a couple of weeks, but I knew that the Masters was going to be a little bit of a stretch for him, and it seems like that's not going to happen. He's as of last Tuesday, he still had not been able to hit golf balls, so it's going to be tough. I know he's disappointed. I know that's a place that is special to any golfer, but he's he's got a good chance to win a green jacket in his career. Just sets up great for his golf game. But he's doing the smart thing, which he doesn't always do, which is being patient, which is also not one of his strong suits. So I've been proud of him. He's really doing this the right way to make sure he comes back.
He's got a ton of points built up, though, from everything last year. He's still in really good shape from a Ryder Cup standings and stuff. He just gets healthy and starts playing okay.
Yeah, and he'd
get picked anyway, but
surprised.
Anyway.
Yeah, I would be surprised if he doesn't play well. And I also think that's why he's taking his time a little bit to make sure he comes back fully healthy. You know, he and Tiger are pretty close now, and I think he's leaned on Tiger, and Tiger's mistakes of maybe coming back a little bit too early from injury, through this time. So I think Tiger's been a good guy to bounce some things off of through this process. So, you know, at least hopefully he's doing a good job of listening to him, and seems like he has.
Well, have a safe trip to Charleston, and we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a great day. Appreciate you having me.